even if we naively break supersymmetry and gauge symmetry, in continuum limit, it's almost automatically restored. But once we go to two or higher dimensions, of course, it's each diagram has UV divergence. So though, even if theory we are interested in, like four-dimensional supermelt, is UV finite, it relies on cancellation of bosonic and fermionic contributions. So unless we have to, unless we carefully regularize it, such cancellation is completely broken, and we don't get correct continuum limit. And starting point is two-dimensional supermelts on lattice. In this case, in two-dimensional lattice formulation works. And this two-dimensional lattice formulation is a basis to study four-dimensional theory. I explain that later. And basic idea is as follows. So in order to control UV divergence, we need supersymmetry. But of course, we cannot keep all supersymmetries simultaneously. So some of them are broken. But here, we keep a few supercharges exactly on lattice. Then use that symmetry and also other discrete symmetries, like 90-degree rotation, and also R symmetry. That's not discrete, though. And we use those other symmetries and supersymmetry to control divergence. And if we have clever choice, then that's enough to forbid Suzy breaking radiative corrections. Then, though in the UV, Suzy is broken by lattice artifact, in IR, Suzy is restored. That's the idea. And that idea was proposed by Kaplan, Unzal, and the collaborators, I think. And there, around 2003, several lattice formulations of two-dimensional supermelts was given. And here I use Sugino's approach, which is slightly different from Kaplan and Unzal. And here the point is we can realize only extended Suzy. Because otherwise we cannot use Kaplan-Unzal's idea to keep a few supersymmetries. So here I said extended. So in two-dimensional case, we can realize 4, 8, and 16 Suzy theories. So dimensional reduction of four-dimensional n equals to 1, 2, and 4. And below, I show the detail about 16 Suzy theories. So this is action in the continuum. So this is the field strength squared. This is the this xi is a scalar. Index I runs from 1 to 8. So it's a transverse collective coordinate of the 1 brains. And this is a potential term. And the fermion is mu on y. And this is a dimensional reduction of 4 dimensional n equals to 4 to 2 dimensional. And so this has 16 supercharges. But we can utilize some at first sight, very complicated, but very useful notation comes from topological field theory. Okay, so this action is written as an exact form in this way. This F is a complicated function written in this way. This B or phi are related to these scalars, xi. This B, BA is B123, which is X123 or something, scalar fields. And this psi plus, psi minus, low, and chi plus are this bar on wire phi. Here, I just relabeled them, gave different names. And here, so this just acting two of 16 supercharges. We can write this action in exact form. Okay. This detail of this shape form is not important. Just this form just keep this form in mind. And Q plus two supercharges, Q plus minus is written like this. It's not important at all. And this Q plus and Q minus satisfies this yield potential condition. And of course, because this S0 is invariant under 60 supercharges, of course, when we act supercharges Q plus or Q minus, it should be zero. By acting other 14 supercharges, we have the same relation. But in order to check it by hand, we have to go through tedious calculation. But because we know this form, and Q plus squared is zero, for example, it's easy to see Q plus S0 equals to zero. At this stage, it's almost tautology. But if we, when we construct lattice SUSY, this relation is very useful. The idea is follows. So realize this SUSY algebra on lattice. It's difficult to construct all 16 supercharges on lattice. It's very difficult, but just realizing 2 plus 2 supercharges is somehow doable. And if we can realize this relation on lattice and define the action in this way by use, of course, we express this F by using lattice fields, then because Q plus squared is 0, this relation is automatically satisfied, even on lattice. So if we find such SUSY algebra on lattice, then we can keep two supercharges, Q plus and Q minus. But how can we find that supercharges? Sorry, supersymmetry transformation lattice. I asked it to Sugino, and he said he found that by trial and error. So just let me show the result. It's easy to check it's correct, but I imagine it's very hard to find. But now he found, so we can use his result. So this U mu is link field, and these fermions are living on links. And here I introduced the auxiliary field H. And the other parts are the same as continuum case. And the covariant derivative is written like this. It's really complicated, but detail isn't needed at all, unless you try to put it on computer and really do simulation. And also, this lattice action has a wrong non-physical vacuum. If you look at the action carefully, you can see that. But by utilizing some clever technique from lattice theory, we can remove such unphysical vacuum. So this detail is not needed, but I think it's easy to understand. If you believe this transformation is really a lattice version of supercharges Q plus minus, then lattice action defined by this keeps two exact supercharges, Q plus and Q minus. Right? And also there's the SU2R symmetry, which rotates Q plus and Q minus.
What are the
lattice variables? So in continuum, so we have scalars, B and X, which corresponds to this X in continuum. And the gain field is hidden inside this covariant derivative. And we have fermions, which corresponds to phi. Then we just replace gain field to link variable. This gain field becomes link variable. And the fermions are still sitting on side. That's it. Really just link variables, scalars, and fermions. And the link variable is a living on link, as you can see from the name. And fermions and scalars are living on site. And lattice is really usual one. between Kaplan and Wormsout's formulation. If you know that, they have very fancy lattice. In Sugino's case, lattice is really like this, usual lattice. If you know work of Kaplan's, they have such strange diagonal links, for example. And in this case, U mu, link variable is living on link, and fermion and scalars are living on site. Scalars and fermions, the scalars will get you. So. Okay, for scalars, yes, in order to utilize this topological field theory notation.
Is it enough? Is it a theorem that in the continuum limit you recover all the remaining charges?
So I will show that from in this slide. And aspects of Kaplan, so and Kaplan and Wormsout use the different shape of lattice, and they keep all the same kind of supercharges, the same supercharges. And they argue that two order perturbation fine tuning is not needed. And for that, we utilize super renormalizability of two dimensional theory. So we just write down generic form of possible UV correction. Then here, this two-dimensional gauge Yamel's coupling with two dimension is dimensionful. So it always accompanies a power of lattice spacing A. G squared has a dimension 2, so it's we should multiply A to the power 2 this time. And if, so suppose this O, OP, is a local operator of this form. So we have a bosonic field, derivative, and fermions. And this P is mass dimension of this operator. Then, because action is dimensionless, we need this specific power of A in order to cancel dimensions coming from operator integral and gauge coupling. Then if we go to higher order imperturbation, you have a higher power of lattice spacing. Then in continuum limit, higher order terms simply disappears. And what we have to be care, what we have to be careful is three level, we don't have to care because it's not ready at the correction. But one loop and two loops. At two loops, this so what? Yes, at one and two loops, it can give a divergent contribution.
No.
So it's a tree, one loop, two loops. And if P is one, for example, then P minus two is negative. So it's dangerous. And if P is two, this part is zero, but still it can give logarithmic divergence. So it's dangerous. But once P becomes larger than two, then, this is three, so don't care. But here, it's already positive power of wave, so we don't have to, you know, take care about them. Okay, so only P equals to one and two are dangerous. But then, because fermion terms always gives P larger than two, we have to be careful only about linearly scalar or squared of scalar. And here I omitted derivative times scalar because it's just a total derivative, which disappears after integration. Okay, then here we have SU2R and the exact SUSY. And because we have SU2R, only and also gauge symmetry, of course, we have only by after imposing SU2R symmetry, trace of some kind of scalars can exist. Here I consider UN gauge theory, in fact, so this is not necessarily zero. But then this is not invariant under exact SUSY, of course, because SUSY exceeds scalar and fermion. So only scalar cannot be SUSY invariant. So this term does not appear. And in a similar manner, we can kill all quadratic terms, only using SU2R and gauge symmetry and exact SUSY. So to all other imperturbation, fine-tuning is not needed. So in two dimensions, thanks to this super-renormalizability, this argument works. But if you go to four dimensions, you have various kind of corrections. You cannot control the divergence. That's the reason why only in low dimension such argument works. Anyway, so here I explained only for 16 SUSY cases, but also for 4 SUSY and 8 SUSY cases, similar argument works. And all of them can be realized on lattice without fine-tuning, at least two order in perturbation. But it's not clear if it works at non-perturbative level. So we have to check it numerically. And in fact, 16 SUSY theory can have sign problem. But 4 SUSY model does not suffer from sign problem, and it's really easy to put it on computer. Then, by... it's just a property of gamma matrices. In all ordinates to four case, it's the same as a four dimensional n equals to one, right? And covariant derivative, it acts by adjoint. And of course, after dimensional reduction, you don't have this term. But anyway, this is on a coordinate space, it's real and anti-symmetric. And in four dimension, you take gamma mu to be Hermitian. And by using charge conjugation matrix and gamma 5, you have such relation. And because this is DL, okay, Dirac operator, which is gamma mu times d mu, this part is real. So the only source of complex phase is here. But because of this relation, we have a determinant of this slash is, of course, determinant of C gamma 5, D slash, C gamma 5 inverse. But this is a determinant of B star, B slash star. So it's real. And also, we can also show it's positive just using this relation. Okay. It's easy to see that it's real, but to show that it's positive is a bit more tricky, but we can do that. It's just a linear algebra. But if you use 10 dimensional or 6 dimensional gamma matrix, you don't have this kind of relation for gamma matrices. Essentially, charge conjugation does not exist in those cases. And in fact, in this lattice formulation, at the discretized level, there is a phase. So here I have shown that in continuum, sign problem is absent. But at lattice level, there is a phase which appears as lattice alpha, but it disappears. We can check it disappears in continuum limit. It's nothing, has nothing to do with supersymmetry.
Depends as well on the number of fermions you have. But that's possible.
No, no, no. So here I have shown that, you know, it's only real.
Yeah.
And so you say, okay, then if we have two flavors in the determinant sphere that appears, so it's like this. But in fact, we can show that, okay, I explain. In this case, what we can show is, if d slash phi satisfies, so this phi, if this phi is the eigenvector with eigenvalue lambda, then something like this phi tilde defined by g gamma phi inverse phi star satisfies d slash phi tilde equal to lambda star phi tilde. And of course, if lambda is not real, this phi and phi tilde are linearly independent because eigenvalues are different. So eigenvalues appear in pair. And if no lambda is real, then determinant is a product of the lambda times lambda star, which is positive. But if lambda is real, then at first sight, this phi and phi tilde is not necessarily linearly independent. But in fact, in this case, after some algebra, we can show that phi and phi tilde are linearly independent, even when lambda is real. So this relation always holds, even for one flavor. Yeah, I don't think this. For example, if you know finite density QCD, then if you study SP gauge group or SU2, two color QCD, then this phi and phi tilde are not necessarily linearly independent. So only when you have even number of flavors, sign is positive. But in this case, it's special, thanks to Fargin, yes. So it's really difficult. But anyway, so thanks to the absence of sign problem, we can study it on computer. And so some conservation law, which should hold when supercharges, which is broken explicitly by lattice artifact restored, is seen to be restored indeed. And also we can, in small volume limit, we can compare it using, with some analytic result at small volume. And also, we compared two different realizations, Sugino's and Kaplan's. And without fine-tuning, they gave the same answer, as I will show in the next plot, next slide. Now, all these results suppose that the correct continuum limit is obtained without performing fine-tuning. And this is a comparison of Sugino's model and Cohen, Kaplan, Katz, Unzel model. So we put the theory on square torus, and L is the size of compactified circle, and we impose periodic boundary condition for fermions for both directions. And then by changing the circumference, Polyakov loop, it's a Wilson loop winding on compact phi dimension, are plotted and they agree nicely. So this direction is the size of the torus. And this is a Polyakov loop winding on this compact phi dimension. And red and green corresponds to Sugino model result and Kaplan-Unzel model result. And they nicely agree. So these are different, like, another kind of regularizations, but without any fine tuning, they give the same answer. And also we measure the size of scalar eigenvalues, and they also agree. Here, difference, there is a slight difference, but I think it's just a numerical error. So anyways, two-dimensional lattice formulation can work. So we can use it to study some physics. And we have not performed the simulation for 16 to the KC yet, but Cantrell and Wiseman tried that. And they apply that for black hole black string transition, or it's known also as Gregory-Laframme transition.
The discrepancy growth looks like growth, right? No, is it? So that's growth when L becomes smaller. It looks like that the discrepancy grows as you go to UV, and that's precisely where you kind of become sensitive to different regularizations. Right.
First,
so I guess I would worry less if you would find a discrepancy and that discrepancy would kind of grow wherever at large L. Then I would really say that, you know, different regularizations are kind of UV insensitive. At least in, you know, in the naive way, but the way you plotted it, it looks...
Actually, for this quantity, I have an execute. I have an execute, because also Wilson loop is easy. It's, they agree very nicely. You find agreement only for scalars. But here, in fact, we added small mass to control flat direction. But anyways, without mass term, there is flat direction. So scalar eigenvalues is really divergent. So this is SU2, so fluctuation is really large. And if you go to small body of L, it's easy to estimate that fluctuation really becomes gross. So it's really hard to control that direction with small body of mass. And in fact, I think this error bar is underestimated in that sense. So, what is black hole black string transition? So consider two-dimensional UN super-MLs on spatial circle. In this case, so we regard this direction as a spatial circle and another direction as a compactified temporal circle. Okay, then it's a D1 brain theory, but that D1 brain is winding on compactified spatial circle. This S1. But if you take T dual along that S1 direction, D1 brain.
I wonder, in this case, once you have imposed supersymmetry on the lattice, do you just give it a cutoff for regularization?
In this case, we use this lattice formulation.
Oh, you mean?
So here, cutoff is the introduced by using, so here, this is lattice. These are lattice fields. Okay, and these lattice fields are really living on lattice. So U mu is living on ring, others are living on sign. And otherwise, we cannot control UV divergence. Okay, then, by taking T dual along this S1, then we get D0 brains on this space. This S1, this S1 are different ones, so radius is, radius of this S1 is inverse of radius of this S1. Okay, and if you look at Polchinski's textbook, you can see that Wilson line phase of two-dimensional theory corresponds to position of D0 brains in T-dual picture. Okay, so if you look, by looking at distribution of Wilson line phase, but by Wilson line, I mean Wilson line winding on this spatial circle, then you can interpret that as a distribution of the zero brains along this circle. If these zero planes are uniformly distributed along this compactified circle, then it can be regarded as uniform black string. This black string is not the one plane. The one plane is, you know, string-like object, but it's not black string. Here, by black string, I mean one-dimensional distribution of the zero planes. And if the zero planes localizes to a certain point, at some point, it looks like black hole. And this is approximated by black zero plane solution. And because position of the zero planes related to Wilson line phases, phase transition from black string phase to black hole phase can be captured by looking at Wilson line phase distribution in two-dimensional supermills. What do we expect? So if we fix the mass or temperature of the black hole or black string, and by shrinking the size of the circle, spatial circle, and aperiodic boundary condition for temporal circle, and aperiodic for temporal circle, and periodic for spatial circle. And we change the size of spatial circle, which has periodic boundary condition. And when this spatial circle, I mean size of spatial circle of dual torus is large, that means before taking T duality, circle is small. So it's really confusing. But in that case, so here I shrink, but I shrink 1 over L, not L. Shrink the size of dual torus. Then, because the size of the torus is really large compared to black hole, it's really a black hole in no compactified dimension. But if space-time becomes of order of size of black hole, this part fills this part, because here we pose periodic boundary condition. At some point, black hole fills S1 completely and becomes black string. And if distribution is not uniform, it's a so-called non-uniform black string. And if distribution is uniform, it's a uniform black string. So there can be three possible phases: black hole, non-uniform black string, and uniform black string.
You're talking about static configuration, right?
Yes, static configuration.
Right, so this non-uniform black string, you would expect it to be static?
Actually, in dual gravity analysis, this phase does not appear, in fact. But seen from the gauge theory, there's no reason to exclude this phase.
There's a reason I'm asking, because some people put in numerical simulations in.
Yeah, and this is not stable anymore.
Right, and they kind of see a different picture, it's not kind of just simple.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there can be many other phases also.
Right.
And of course, here I have shown only simple ones, but Wilson line phases can form several bunches, for example, yeah. Or such a pattern.
Right.
Okay, then what is the counterpart in supermills? So I say Wilson line phase is position of the zero plane. So we write a Wilson line winding on this direction in this way. Then this theta 1, theta 2, theta n corresponds to position of the zero planes. And this theory has center symmetry, which is a shift of this theta, like constant. And if this theta is uniformly distributed, center symmetry is not broken. If uniform distribution is mapped to uniform distribution by this shift along compact direction. But this theta, when this theta are localized, then by constant shift, that clamp goes to some different point. So center symmetry is broken. And all the parameter is trace of W. When theta is uniformly distributed, it's simply zero. When it's localized, it's non-zero. So by looking at value of this observable, we can detect that phase transition. So this is a phase diagram which is predicted by theoretical calculation using ADS-GFT. So this direction is temperature inverse. So zero temperature and infinite temperature. And this direction is size of spatial circle. And when spatial circle is large, size of spatial circle in TDR picture is small. So it's a black string phase. And when this radius is small, dual torus is large, so it's in black hole phase. And by comparing free energy of black string solution and black hole solution, we can find some first order transition here. And that analysis holds only in low temperature limit where supergravity analysis is justified. And this blue region and red region represents the region where 2B supergravity description is good, and dual 2A supergravity description is good. And in 2B supergravity region, we don't see any phase transition, but in 2A supergravity region, we can find some phase transition from black hole to black string, or center broken to unbroken. And this analysis simply says, from supergravity analysis, we can only say phase, here there is first order phase transition, but of course there is hysteresis. And we will see transition above this line. Around here, we should see some phase transition. That's a prediction from supergravity. And also, at high temperature limit, if you shrink temporal circle, then it just reduces to one-dimensional bosonic theory because fermions completely decouples.
What is P tau?
P tau is a Polyakov loop winding on this direction. And P tau is always non-zero. And Px is what I wrote, W. And that's zero here and non-zero here. And this part is, can be analyzed using a one-dimensional system, which is really easy to analyze. And then, although here supergravity suggests there is only one phase transition, which is of first order. Here, there are two transitions, second and the third. First one is black hole to non-uniform black string. Second one is non-uniform one to uniform black string. So there must be some, at some point, phase transition, two-phase transition should appear. It's really non-trivial, and the intermediate region can be studied only using two-dimensional lattice simulation. And these guys try to do that simulation. And this is their result. So this is this direction is size of this circle. This is the inverse of temporal circle. And this is a contour. So this line is a contour where Wilson loop, or especially special Wilson is called loop, I think. That is 0.6. Here it's 0.5, and here it's 0.4. And it's for SU3, and it's for SU4. And that phase transition is larger than phase transition. So what we expect is at SU2, so take the size of spatial circle, this direction, and the value of Wilson loop here. At SU3, it's not really a transition. SU4, it should become sharper. And SU infinity, if it's on first order, we see some phase transition, only at SU infinity. this is what we expect. And they could study only up to SU5. So of course, it's really hard to see this gap. But they claim that they see the pattern that this transition becomes sharper. So here, this contour corresponding to 0.5 is hitting almost the same place, but 0.4 and 0.6 comes closer to 0.5, and 0.4 comes closer to 0.5. And they say, okay, it's consistent with this expectation. And the phase transition should sit around here. And this is the line. So this line is a contour where Wilson loop is 0.5, which they claim to be black hole Bakshin transition point. And this sky blue region represents that SU4, this line, gives larger value compared to SU3, which should be left side of this transition, they say. And the other place is SU3 gives smaller value through this region. And it's really consistent with the interpretation that this line represents first order phase transition. That's a claim by Kajol and Weizmann. And this line is sitting around here. So this this line is determined by theory, and it claims this real phase transition should come right up here. And they say really it's sitting on the right of this line. And parametric dependence is the same. Parametric dependence of this line is R squared X is some value times square root of R tau, this direction. And that parametric dependence is reproduced. That's what they say. So that's not my simulation, so I'm not sure to what extent I should trust their result. But at least this result is not very bad. It looks UN Yamils on two-dimensional really captures basic features of Gregorita parametric transition.
Yesterday you were telling us about simulating the zero plane. Yeah. Why don't you simulate here the zero plane field? Instead of simulating the two
plane. Then one-dimensional super-Yamils is a small volume limit of two-dimensional theory. In that sense, we simulated directly on this line. So this is one-dimensional theory. And it's difficult to put boundary. So in that case, in that model, these zero planes are sitting in non-compact space. And it's really hard to introduce this periodic boundary condition for one transverse dimension. And I think the only way to do that is use two-dimensional theory and use key dual interpretation. So then we can go to four-dimensional equals to four. So let me introduce main idea and the technical part. So starting point is three-dimensional maximal super-Yamils. So there is a paper by Naldasena and company which claims fuzzy sphere is very useful to get three-dimensional maximal super-Yamils. So starting point is Bernstein, Naldasena, Anastasis matrix model, this one, plus Fermi part, which is a deformation of usual visual brain quantum mechanics, which preserves 16 supersymmetries. And this part is the same as the zero brain quantum mechanics. And here they have flux and mass parameters. Okay, this mu has a dimension of mass. And there are nine scalars, but this Chan-Simon-like coupling exists only for three of nine scalars. And the three directions and the other six directions has a different value of mass. And it has fuzzy sphere solution. So equation of motion is this way. And XA equals to mu over 3 times JA, where JA is a generator of basic algebra, is a solution to this equation of motion. And furthermore, it keeps all 16 supersymmetries. It's PPS solution. And around it, if we expand this theory around fuzzy sphere, K coincident fuzzy sphere, then we get 1 plus 2 dimensional non commutative space. So one dimension exists from the beginning as temporal direction, but the other two directions are generated through fuzzy sphere. And it's called Myers effect. Okay, so D2 brain is formed from many D0 brains. And in non-commutative space, there is a notorious phenomenon, UVIR mixing. Although non-commutative space and the commutative space are smoothly connected at classical level, once you take into account quantum correction, commutative limit is usually singular. But this claims that with maximal supersymmetry, commutative limit should be smooth. Then, by taking commutative limit of this non-commutative theory, we get supermutations on commutative space. And the point is, this theory is UV finite. We can put it on computer just by introducing momentum cutoff. Then first take continuum limit as one-dimensional theory. Then take large M. Then without fine-tuning, three-dimensional theory is obtained. That's claimed by Maradasen and company. Then how can we construct four-dimensional theory?
There was a term that was
imagined. It's different from usual chance cyclones. In chance cyclones term in three dimensions, one of x is a temporal direction. In this case, all x is in spatial directions, so it's different. Then, what they claimed is starting with one-dimensional theory, we can get three-dimensional theory. Then, if we start with two-dimensional theory, which is D1 brain, we can get four-dimensional theory, which is D3 brains. So, crucial point is D1 brain theory, two-dimensional supermills, can be formulated on lattice without performing any fine-tuning. So, first, construct VMN-like two-dimensional theory, which has fuzzy sphere solution. Then take two-dimensional continuum limit first. Then supersymmetry is restored. It gives D1 brain theory. And then it has fuzzy sphere classical solutions. And we can take large N. And at each, you know, for each fixed N, supersymmetry is restored. So that large N limit does not introduce any fine-tuning problem. And you may feel weird that we are taking very asymmetric continuum limit or anisotropic continuum limit. We take two-dimensional continuum limit first and then take continuum limit to other dimensions. But a similar anisotropic continuum limit was taken by various people. For example, Kaplan and Katzunzer started with a four-dimensional lattice and took continuum limit for two directions first, and then two other two directions. They argue that they can reduce the number of fine-tuning parameters, though some fine-tuning remains. And it's really analogous to deconstruction of five-dimensional gate theory from four dimensions. in this case, they have a four-dimensional continuum theory, and from that, they have to construct some sort of lattice, and construct five-dimensional theory. And in fact, by this anisotropic limit, there is a compared to isotropic limit, there is a finite to connect two limits. We need finite counterterms, but that finite counterterms is exactly what we need to restore supersymmetry by fine tuning. So by taking this isotropic continuum limit, fine tuning is not needed. It's taken care automatically. So what we should do is just construct two-dimensional BMN-like theory on lattice. Okay, then to continuum action, we add BMN-like deformation. So to original term, we add this term. So scalar mass and cubic term, and this is again mass, and so mass-like time. Like term for fermions, and we have to add some fancy term for other bosonic fields. Then, just slightly changing Suzy transformation of Q plus minus, it's realized. And that modified supercharges satisfies this relation. This J is a generator of SU2R. It's not nilpotent, Q plus squared is not zero, but you can see that if you write S equals to Q plus Q minus minus some constant times this function, it's Q closed. If you multiply Q plus here by using this anti-computational relation, you can see that Q plus times this part is zero. So just replacing continuum fields by lattice fields at Sugino D, we get lattice formulation of this BMN-like two-dimensional theory. The argument of absence of fine-tuning is really parallel because we keep Q plus minus and SU2R. And that's exactly what we needed to show the absence of fine-tuning. And so it's almost the same. Then using Myers effect, we can uplift this two-dimensional theory to four-dimensional. So first, take continuum limit as two-dimensional theory. At that stage, there is no fine-tuning. And secondly, take a K-coincident fuzzy sphere solution. By K-coincident fuzzy sphere, I mean it's a fuzzy sphere times identity. And the metric size n is related to size of SU2 generator, to n plus 1 times k. This n is a spin. And non-commutativity parameter is written like this. Oh, here I wrote capital M, but it's the same as mu. Then first, by fixing this non-commutative parameter theta, we take Lagrangian limit. Then UV and IR momentum cutoff, M times N and M. By fixing this value, so N behaves M behaves as 1 over square root of N, but then UV cutoff is square root of N, and IR cutoff is 1 over square root of N. So UV cutoff goes to infinity, and IR cutoff goes to 0. And we get non-commutative field theory on flat non-commutative plane. And the coupling constant of 4 dimension is related to coupling dimension of 2 dimension. In this way, so we have to multiply non-commutativity parameter, but it's just a dimensionless combination, so it's easy to understand why this form appears. Okay, but when we take this limit, in fact, by introducing deformation, in BMN case, all 16 SUSYs are preserved, but in two-dimensional case, it's impossible to keep all super symmetries. At most, 12 can be preserved. And in our case, we keep only 2, Q plus minus, exact. And other 14 supercharges are softly broken in two-dimensional theory. But because it's just a soft breaking, that does not give a severe UV effect. And we can simply argue that effect of softly breaking disappears when we take large N limit. And at the same time, we send M to be zero. Okay. Then UV divergence can appear only in this way. So this M is the only dimensional flow parameter. So UV this M is exactly softly breaking parameter. So if UV divergence appears, it must be of this form. Not that four dimensional n equals to 4 is UV finite. So M to the 0 never appears. And this N appears because this N is related to UV cutoff. UV momentum cutoff is square of N. So because theory is UV finite, after soft breaking, it is at most logarithmically divergent. And because if we naively set M equals to 0, it's 0, we have only this kind of combination. But this M scales as 1 over square root n. So in large n limit, it goes to 0. So super MLs with maximal supersymmetry on flat non-commutative space is obtained. Then in the end, we can take commutative limit. And with maximal supersymmetry, commutative limit is smooth. That's what people believe, but it's not proven yet, I think. And now I'm trying to prove that. But for the moment, just believe this statement.
It's restored. There are no non-perturbative corrections at first.
Yes. This argument is perturbative. Yes. Right. And in when we take two-dimensional commutative continuum limit, I think that there is no fine-tuning even at non-perturbative level. Similarly to force of the case, I think. But in this uplift to four dimension, yeah, as you said, this generation of a non-commutative space is perturbative argument. So it can disagree. But it has nice string realization, so I think its string theory may be like a couple. So I'm very optimistic about that. So for the n equals to 4 can be formulated without recurring parameter fine-tuning, at least two all-order imperturbation, as you say. And the UV finiteness is the key to justify the use of Paddy's sphere, this last statement. And people say so because, in UV-IR mixing, IR divergence, which does not exist in commutative theory, appears. But that comes from UV divergence. UV divergence is transmitted to transfer to IR divergence. But if the original theory is UV finite, no divergence can come from UV. So there should be no IR, strange IR singularity. That's an argument. But anyway, UV finite is a key to justify the use of Paddy sphere. So I don't know if it can be used for Seiberg Witten, for example, or Suzy QCD. And simulation can be done, hopefully, in near future. And we were planning, but after big earthquake in Japan, now we cannot fully utilize the resources there. So we have to wait 1 year, I think. But next year, I don't expect any trouble. So next summer, I can give some tentative example.
Theory, this deformation, BMN-like deformation of the D-word.
That deformation itself can be studied by many people just after BMN paper. So in BMN, so Meyer's effect can be regarded that deserving caps to background RR flux, right? And in similar manner, it can be regarded as a membrane in background free-form field, I think.
D1 brain,
or yes, or perhaps a light form description of M2 brain. I'm not sure.
Naive question. I'm wondering how does the lattice know about the transformation rules, or whether they are just needed for to show that the action is supersymmetric?
So this is a transformation lattice.
Yes. So I mean, in the actual simulation, are these important, or are they just needed for to show that the action is supersymmetric?
This transformation. Yeah, this so lattice action is keeps only two exact supercharges, which is this Q plus minus.
Yes.
And that's enough to see. So what I have shown is at IR for long distance, the Suzy breaking effect at UV cannot be seen. So if you measure, you know, two point functions, then at really short distance scale, which is almost that is cut off, then you will see Suzy breaking, explicitly breaking. But as long as you are looking at sufficiently long distance physics, you will not see any Suzy breaking.
So they needed formally to prove.
This is a specific form, you mean? It's a fancy notation.
Is it so that you don't actually use them in the simulation? You just need to be reassured that there aren't any radiative corrections that could.
Yeah. But to write down programming, then this notation is, of course, more useful because that is realization really utilize this notation. So we really like simulation for using these variables. Not by this variable, but this VDA. Psi plus minus. We write simulation model using these variables. You know, this expression and this expression are equivalent, but the relationship is really complicated. And using original variables, it's really hard to write down, manifest this transformation. And with original variables, action looks more complicated. That is action. So, this was the summary. This is my last slide. So, maximum superimage can be put on computer if one does not stick on lattice. Of course, for 3 and 4 dimensional proposal is just by 2-order-length perturbation only. So, we have to test, but I'm quite optimistic. And as I explained yesterday, sine problem is most likely no problem. We just forget about phase. And for one dimension, using non-lattice technique, nice and precise results are obtained. And the two-dimensional lattice simulation is ongoing. And the 3-dimension and the 4-dimension can be realized using PartiSphere. And the results is coming soon, hopefully. And for other theories, like Suzy QCD, new ideas are needed because the regularization for 4-dimension, I explained right now, is heavily utilized UV finiteness, and Suzy QCD is not UV finite, of course, so for this field method cannot be applied. Anyway, so maximally supersymmetric theories are easier because of that reason. And especially in one-dimensional case, now we are looking at one-bind correction. And the most important question, you know, does gauge gravity duality for that finite n can be answered soon, I think. I think it's true even at finite n. But I need more precise simulation. And if gauge gravity duality turns out to be true even at finite n, do you think that we can simulate quantum superstring? And if that strongest version of gauge gravity duality turns out to be true in one dimension, I think in other dimensions it's true as well. So using these techniques, we can study quantum superstring in detail. And that's already within reach. That's my conclusion.